relief factor, pain relief that's natural, pain relief that works, and pain relief that attacks the source of the pain. That's the experience of tens of thousands of Americans who are taking Relief Factor right now. See their incredible video endorsements at ReliefFactor.com and then order your three-week quick starter pack for just $19.95. That's less than a dollar a day. Find out if it can work for you like it works for me by ordering your three-week quick starter pack today. ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com. Be the next success story.
This episode of the America First podcast with me, Sebastian Gorka, is brought to you by Franklin Armory. Shop freedom, quality, and innovation at franklinarmory.com. Franklin Armory, we are facilitators of freedom. Welcome, dear friends, to America First One-on-One. You know my backstory. If you're a loyal listener and viewer, you know that I came to America 13 years ago. 10 years ago this year, we're having a big party this weekend. I became an American citizen. I chose this nation, and my parents escaped communism. So for me, this is the greatest nation on God's earth. And for many years, when people said to me, "Communism's coming. Communism, socialism is coming to America," I said, "Oh, really? Let me talk to you about communism. Let me talk to you about the secret police officers that tortured my father, that put him in solitary and gave him a life sentence at the age of 20. I don't make fun of them anymore. We may not have the gulags yet, but there is a Marxist rhetoric coming straight out of the White House. If you don't believe me, listen to the man who sadly bears the title President of the United States.
To the companies running gas stations and setting those prices at the pump, this is a time of war, global peril, Ukraine. These are not normal times. Bring down the price you are charging at the pump to reflect the cost you are paying for the product. Do it now. Do it today. Your customers, the American people, they need relief now.
It's those wicked, greedy gas station owners. Where have we heard rhetoric like that before? Let's ask somebody who has probably one of the shortest bios on social media, and I love it. It says, "Capitalist and citizen, Vivek Ramaswamy. Welcome back to America First."
Good to see you. How you doing?
I'm doing well. It's been really hard to get you on the show. I think we've had President Trump on twice in the meantime trying to get you back on. But you're a busy man because you've got a very, very important message. You've got a new book coming out in September. You've got a new company. We'll talk about all of that. But let's start at the beginning. As somebody who is a proud capitalist and citizen, this language that we've been hearing at the moment out of this administration about the greedy, greedy gas station owners, why can't you just sell it cheaper? Am I reading a little bit into it when I say this smacks of systems we've seen fail elsewhere, Vivek?
I don't think you're reading too much into it at all. The only thing you might be missing is a bad understanding of how markets actually work that this president suffers. But what he forgets is that this is actually the direct product of their own policy agenda. I'll remind you that he said in September 2019, he made a campaign promise. The campaign promise was, "I guarantee you we're going to end fossil fuels." That was the quote, precisely. Well, Guess what? That seems one campaign promise he seems pretty intent on delivering on. Cutting permits for drilling in, say, Alaska, over 1 million acres of land leases canceled just in the last few months. You have a refinery expansion in the U.S. Virgin Islands that was ultimately cut. A lot of actions that have constrained the ability for the U.S. oil and gas sector to be able to produce. Guess what happens in the laws of supply and demand? When you cut down supply, prices go up, especially when demand stays flat or demand goes up. So when prices go up at the pump, I think it reflects a deep misunderstanding of how markets work when you have a president of the United States issuing a wishful order to companies as in the private sector, as though in a competitive economy, they can voluntarily coordinate to lower prices, when in fact, it's been the public policies that that administration has advanced combined with the ESG movement in the private sector that they support, which we can talk about later. But those factors are exactly the Biden policy agenda that led to higher gas prices in the first place. And I think the first step to a solution is to at least be able to talk about these issues in the open freely.
Yeah, it's like the bad version of President Trump's promises kept. He made promises. Get us off fossil fuel. Get rid of all of this garbage. Shut down the XL Keystone pipeline. And he kept those promises on day one. However, I have to ask, I mean, we've seen the amazing statistics just this week that the majority of people with econ positions in this administration have no background in business. None. Zilch. Never signed the front of a check. And they're the people who are doing the economics policy. But even so, were you surprised, Vivek, this week, 2 days ago, we played the cut from testimony on Capitol Hill, where the Secretary of Transport, the guy who fakes riding on a bicycle to work, actually said the more pain people suffer as a result of higher gas prices, Pete Buttigieg said, the better it is for people with their Teslas. Are you surprised that they're that disconnected?
I'm not that surprised. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, I knew Pete in college. He was 3 years ahead of me. You know, he's a good guy. He's well-intentioned. I don't think his understanding of either economics or how to actually implement policy through the administration is necessarily up to snuff with the rest of his academic credentials. But we'll put that to one side. What I actually think we got to focus on is the ways in which a lot of what we're seeing is the intentional product of a policy agenda. And in that sense, there's a part of his statement that's actually honest. Now, I have my views on the merits of fossil fuels and their role in a vibrant American society, in any vibrant society. But whether or not you agree with my views, I think you at least have to be honest in acknowledging to people that this green energy transition comes at a cost. It comes at higher gas prices. It comes at the cost of subsidies for wind and solar and electric vehicles that increase the cost of capital for oil and gas projects. And I think what we're seeing from the administration right now is they've actually delivered on some of their campaign promises I disagree with, but campaign promises like the commitment to end oil and gas in the United States. But as they see the consequences of that economically, and as they see that possibly costing them politically starting this November, they're starting to say that, no, actually, that wasn't part of the agenda they wanted either way. And so what I think we need to do is to actually air the issue for open debate. Let's put it out in the open and say that maybe if you're in the camp that really believes that climate change poses an existential threat in the next 10 to 15 years, that we need to dramatically shift to wind and solar, which, by the way, are going to do very little to fight climate change, no matter what your views are. But if that's your view, great, accept these consequences, own it, and say this is the cost of the green energy transition, and these are the sacrifices that everyday Americans are going to have to make. Stick to the position and own it. But you can't have it both ways. On the other side, where I fall on the other side of that debate, to say that actually there's much more effective ways to fight for a clean energy agenda. Much of that is through domestic oil and gas production here in the United States. Because you know what happens when you cut fossil fuels in the United States? Russia and China and other countries pick up the slack in a global market. Yeah. And people forget that actually U.S. oil and gas production is far cleaner than oil and gas production and coal production in places like China. But let's have that debate in the open rather than actually trying to now walk back, put the toothpaste back in the tube by saying that actually we want gas prices to come down magically because we blame oil industry profits for giving us those high gas prices. That's a myth.
You mentioned the acronym ESG. What does it stand for, Vivek, and how does it fit into this discussion?
So this is the lurking demon underneath the discussion that conservatives and liberals both miss, okay? ESG stands for environmental, social, and governance factors. Sounds benign enough, and it's an approach to describing how investors are to allocate their capital in the private sector and how investors are supposed to exercise their voice as the shareholder of America's largest public companies, or really all of America's public companies. In reality, here's what's going on. You have a small group of asset managers in the United States, asset managers like BlackRock, State Street, and Vanguard, just those three, by the way, managing over $22 trillion, that is more than the GDP of the United States, that are aggregating the money of everyday citizens across this country, probably most of the listeners of this program. And what they're doing is they're showing up then as the largest shareholders of companies like Exxon and Chevron and Disney and Nike, et cetera. And telling them that they have to adopt a one-sided political agenda when it comes to climate change, emissions cuts to fight climate change, racial quota systems to fight systemic racism, social agendas on one side of the political spectrum, that most of those everyday citizens, the people whose money they're managing, actually disagree with. That is, I think, the biggest financial fraud of the 21st century. Large asset managers using the money of everyday citizens to advocate for policies that most of those everyday citizens disapprove of. In the financial universe, it's what you call a fiduciary breach. In common language, it is the equivalent of, I think, a large-scale financial and ideological fraud. And yet they've managed to dupe both sides of the political spectrum into submission because liberals who used to be skeptical of corporate overreach are now saying, well, maybe we're going to be okay with that type of corporate power being exercised because they're advancing the values that we love. And conservatives have actually, at least some of them, been duped into submission by saying that, you know what, we all said all along that the free market can do no wrong. This is just the free market doing its work, not big government, when in fact it's not the invisible hand of the market, but the invisible fist of government that's actually guiding that market behavior. So that's what this is all about.
All right, we're going to talk about just how much we don't have a free market in America. If you want to know more about the ESG phenomena, my guest and his co-author, Alex Acosta, have written a piece in the Wall Street Journal. I'm going to post it right now on all my feeds. Biden's ESG tax on your retirement fund. Don't go anywhere. This is America First. If you enjoy this show, the deep dive with the real experts, the newsmakers, then make sure you never, ever miss our discussions. Go to your favorite podcast platform. Go to Spotify. Plug in my name, America First, Sebastian Gorka. Subscribe. It's absolutely free. Write us a five-star review. It helps with the Darcy algorithms. And also share the links with your friends. If you haven't done it yet, join us. Register right now for our Stand With Israel tour. 10 days later this year, we are going to the Holy Land with my superb Salem colleague, Dinesh D'Souza, and his lovely wife, Debbie. They've never been. I've been, I don't know, a dozen times already. But if you've never been to Israel, you've got to join us. Even if you've been before, it doesn't matter because you haven't been with me and Dinesh. 10 days in November and December. They've dropped all their COVID requirements. Israel got it completely wrong. I'm not vaccinated and I'm going. So you've got no excuse. Register for the trip of a lifetime. Call 855-565-5519. StandWithIsraelTour.com. That's 855-565-5519. StandWithIsraelTour.com. MyPillow is having their biggest sheet sale of the year. You all have helped build MyPillow into the amazing company that it is today. Now, Mike Lindell, my buddy, the inventor and CEO, wants to give back to my listeners. The Percal bedsheet set is available in a variety of colors and sizes, and they're on sale. For example, the queen size is regularly $89.98, but now for you, just $39.98 with your listener promo. Order now, because when they're gone, they're gone. The Percal sheets are breathable and have a cool, crisp feel. They come with a 10-year warranty and a 60-day money-back guarantee. Don't miss out on this incredible offer. It's a limited supply, so be sure to order now. Call 1-800-829-8468, promo code Gorka, or just go to MyPillow.com, click on the radio listener square, and plug in G-O-R-K-A. That's 1-800-829-8468 or MyPillow.com, code Gorka. If you think that my guest and I are just making up this stuff about woke corporations and these scoring systems that are used for political perverse power games, yeah, we're not. Here, I think this is thanks to Project Veritas. This is a video from an in-corporate all-hands meeting from Disney with one of their chief executives who talks about things if I were an executive, I wouldn't be talking about inside an all-hands meeting. Play cut.
I'm here as a mother of two queer children, actually. One transgender child and one pansexual child. And also as a leader. One of our execs stood up and said, you know, we only have a handful of queer leads in our content. And I went, what? That can't be true. And I realized, oh, it actually is true. We have many, many, many LGBTQIA characters in our stories, and yet we don't have enough leads.
That woman, that executive at the top of the chain, is talking about her pansexual children at a staff meeting. Later, one of her colleagues talks about her not-so-secret agenda to gayify the products of that corporation. Call me old school. I don't talk about the sexual habits of my children when I'm at a business meeting. But help me out, Vivek. You literally wrote the book Woke Inc. Where did this come from? What is the transmission belt for this politicization of corporate America, because call me naive, as far as I'm concerned, corporate America has one job: provide me a service or a product at the best price. That's about it. Was it the hiring of the gender study graduates who then worked their way up to the heads of HR, or is it a little bit more complicated? You've mapped this out. So how on earth did this insanity occur?
Well, look, it took a whole book to explain it, because there's not one silver bullet. But one of the underappreciated causes was actually the 2008 financial crisis. So I remember this because I got my first job at a hedge fund in New York City in the fall of 2007. It was on the eve of the 08 crisis. And what happened with the 08 crisis was something really interesting in this country. It was the beginning of a political realignment where historically the left was actually really mad at what happened with Wall Street. They got paid a lot of money when times were good. They got bailed out by the public when times were bad. I was an opponent of the bailouts myself. But what happened was that Occupy Wall Street was on Wall Street's doorstep. And Wall Street, and eventually big business in this country, made the same move along with them, said that, you know what, we don't want to talk about systemic financial risk, but we'll talk about systemic racism instead. You know, Occupy Wall Street is a tough bill to swallow, but the new woke stuff is actually pretty easy, right? Applaud diversity and inclusion. You put some token minorities on your boards. Talk about the LGBTQIA plus movement, flying a private jet to Davos after say you go to a fancy ski town to preach about the racially disparate impact of climate change. You know, it's a pretty good gig if you can get it, as long as the old left looks the other way when it comes to leaving our corporate power structure intact. That was kind of the cynical arranged marriage between that new left and big business in this country.
So they thought, let me just tease this out a little bit, the people who wanted to make money, the people in power inside corporate America said, this is going to be a sinecure, this is just going to be a little placation of these people, and then we can get on with business.
But it worked. It worked so well that they started doubling down on it. So Silicon Valley saw that worked for Wall Street. What do they recognize? They say that, hey, you know what? The threat to monopoly power and breaking up big tech, that used to come from the left. You know, these Republicans over here, they're not going to bother us. They believe in the market anyway. They love companies. Let's do this. We'll agree to take down hate speech or misinformation or moderate content that left doesn't want to see online, as long as they agree to look the other way when it comes to leaving our monopoly power intact. And again, that trade worked well enough that then Nike and Disney and Airbnb and Coca-Cola and Delta and the rest of corporate America started getting on the act, right? If you're Coca-Cola, you'd rather talk about teaching your employees how to be less white or make some statements about a voting law in Georgia than you would about the nationwide epidemic of diabetes and obesity, including, by the way, in the black community that they profess to care so much about. This was a convenient trade. It was an arranged marriage, but not of love. It was more like mutual prostitution. And Sebastian, the net result of that was the birth of what I call this woke industrial complex, a new force in modern American life that was far more powerful than either the private sector or big government alone, because it was a hybrid of the two that together could do what neither of them would have ever been able to accomplish on their own. Therein lies the birth of the modern Disney. And by the way, the lurking sort of ghost behind all of this is actually the largest asset managers in the world. We talked about them before in the case of the ESG movement. But one of the things to look at in the case of Disney of why they've taken this turn is look at who Disney's top shareholders are. The top three shareholders of Disney are those same firms I mentioned before: BlackRock, State Street, and Vanguard. And guess what? Those firms should be directing a company as a shareholder to say that, you know what, you're alienating your customer base. Customer volume goes down. Your stock has underperformed the S&P 500. Knock it off and get out of politics and go back to solving problems for your customers and giving them great products and services. But they're not delivering that message because they're delivering a one-sided political agenda using the savings and funds of everyday Americans to do it. So as I said at the beginning, there's a complicated problem. There are many layers to it. Some of it's cultural. Some of it starts with the 2008 financial crisis and then behaviors that then continued thereafter. But the biggest problem today is that the parties who claim to be the shareholders of the company, and after all, Milton Friedman said that if you're a company CEO, you work for the shareholders.
Yeah.
Well, the guys who claim to be the shareholders today are exactly the institutions that are demanding companies like Disney to behave this way.
He has a way with words, whether it's talking about mutual prostitution or the woke industrial complex. I think we have a title for this interview. He knows of which he speaks. Vivek Ramaswamy, the last book is Woke Inc., the new one we're going to mention in a moment, A Nation of Victims. But please, if you enjoyed this show, support those that make it possible. A real businessman, a truth teller extraordinaire, Mike Lindell, friend of the president. They've now canceled him, yes, at Walmart. They've banned his products. Why? Because they're bad? No, they're excellent. He sold 51 million of his MyPillows. They've canceled him because he's a conservative. Use my name at MyPillow.com and Mike will give you up to 66% off. You can call them 800-829-8468. That's 800-829-8468. MyPillow.com. Promo code G-O-R-K-A. Let's show Mike some love. All right, so I want to dive straight into what you just said with a real, again, naive question. I'm not a businessman. I'm awful at mathematics and econ and all that stuff. I know how to spend money. Ask my wife. I'm very good at spending money. But here is my naive question. Is there not a point at which the business interest says to the woke interest, no, we're not doing it? For example, let me take Hollywood. Hollywood is irredeemably woke, whether you look at what they've done to Marvel franchise, Star Trek, Star Wars. They've just destroyed these golden geese laying billion-dollar eggs. Then along comes a guy who says, screw the wokerati. I'm not going to have China censor my movie. I'm not going to have any woke message. And Tom Cruise makes literally $1 billion in 6 weeks with Top Gun Maverick. Is there not a point at which the profit motive buttresses up against the wokeification and the real businessmen say, basta? Or is it too ingrained in the system? What is your prognosis?
I think that there's a better way forward, and we're hitting a tipping point now. And that tipping point is driven by the fact that times of excess have now receded into times of necessity. You take one good example. You're talking about Hollywood. I'll just pick this example in Hollywood. Netflix, okay? Reported disastrous quarterly results earlier this year. Subscriber growth went down. Profits went down. Revenue went down. The stock price took a beating. Guess what Netflix did not too long after that? They sent a memo to their employees, adding the word excellence to the top of their company's cultural document, something that the company had never done before. And they also told employees to say that, you know what, if you're going to work on projects that we think have artistic merit that make you uncomfortable and you don't want to work on them, then consider working at a different company. Look, I disagree with a lot of what Netflix has done over the last few years, but I also believe in calling out good behavior wherever I see it. And if a company's going to right the ship in the right direction, then I'm going to call that out too and praise them for it. But at the end of the day, what's driving this? It was the fact that they had a disastrous quarterly results. They had a disastrous economic trend in their business. They had a time of necessity. And I think that that's what we're seeing right now, where this market crash that we've been in the middle of this year, especially in tech stocks and in fashionable high-growth companies, that could actually be a moment for a cultural turning point. Because part of what's driven this is times of excess over the last half decade or more of easy monetary policy. We've been skiing on artificial snow. Once the artificial snowmaker stops making the artificial snow, you have to ski on real snow, and that time of scarcity is going to focus companies back on what they actually need to be focused on, or else another company is going to step up and put them out of business. So I think the tides are changing right now, and I'm pretty optimistic, actually.
Well, that's a very, very nice scenario, and I hope it occurs. And yes, that memo from Netflix was fascinating. However, let's return to some of those titans that you mentioned, the Palo Alto, what is it Breitbart calls them, the masters of the universe. We don't have a free market. You used the phrase monopoly, cartel, absolutely right. So if you're in a cartel or monopoly position, you can do whatever you like, can you not, Vivek?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm optimistic over the long run. Make no mistake. We have a lot of work yet to do. We need to break up some of those cartels, I think, through the market itself. You know, you could have a debate about which is the most dangerous cartel in the country right now. Is it the Silicon Valley cartel with the monopoly on ideas of what products to censor? That's a good candidate for number one. But the other good candidate for number one is the asset management cartel, that small handful of asset managers, which are telling companies in every sector how to behave, wielding $22 trillion of everyday citizens' money to do it. So
you're talking about the BlackRocks.
I'm talking about the BlackRock-led cartel and then Silicon Valley cartel. So those are the two big cartels. you know, everyone has to decide where they're going to focus. I've written a lot about the big tech cartel on the page of the Wall Street Journal, in my book elsewhere. That's a really hard problem to take on. Elon Musk was looking to take it on. Maybe he'll, maybe he won't. I've decided to tackle the other one. Okay, I'm focusing on the asset management cartel because they affect every other industry, from the U.S. energy industry to U.S. consumer companies. And if somebody creates competition that actually takes market share away from the BlackRocks of the world, that's part of what's going to change every industry. I can tell you from firsthand experience, having been in the early stages of this journey, that's not going to be easy. But the good news is that the majority of everyday Americans, certainly the ones who have capital to wield, right? Hard workers, net savers, people who actually have families that ultimately work hard to make a living and have growing investment accounts. These are the 100 plus million Americans who badly want to see a change in the private sector. And at the end of the day, I think that's going to provide the winning hand for new competitors that want to challenge these existing cartels. But it's a long road to hoe before we get there. All I'm saying is there are some beginnings of a cultural shifting tide that could really be a tailwind to you know, folks like myself. Elon, if he's doing this in Silicon Valley, I hope he does. I think that there's room for new competitors to really take down these existing cartels.
Well, you're a brave man, or maybe a quixotic individual, because I thought you were just about getting to some kind of critical mass, taking on the woke corporations, and you're saying, oh, no, that's doing fine. That'll trundle on its way, and now you're going to take on the likes of BlackRock. You are a ambitious individual. We'll talk about Strive. He is the executive chairman of a new venture. He's got a new book, new corporation. The guy is unstoppable. We're talking to Vivek Ramaswamy, the author of Woke Inc., and also the upcoming Nation of Victims. You can follow him at Vivek G. Ramaswamy on Twitter. I'm Sebastian Gorka. We are all over social media, except the fascists at YouTube. We don't mess with them. But Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, Truth Social, and Rumble, follow us there. We are broadcasting to you from the ReliefFactor.com studios. If you're in daily pain, if you've tried everything else and failed to find relief, try a 100% drug-free product that is liberating 500,000 Americans from their daily pain, me included. Find out for yourself by ordering the 3-week quick starter pack at ReliefFactor.com. It'll be at your door in 3 days or less. Take it morning and evening like I do, and I promise you, Dr. The G's guarantee. By the end of those 3 weeks, you will know whether it works for you like it works for me and 500,000 of your fellow Americans. Call 800-500-8384 or just go to ReliefFactor.com. That's 800-500-8384, ReliefFactor.com. So grateful for all the kind comments that you approve of the new Dr. G. Yes, if you look at this, I've lost 34 pounds in 2 months thanks to the amazing graces of Dr. Ashley Lucas and her team at PhD Nutrition and Weight Loss. First diet in 20 years that actually worked. My wife has lost 25 pounds. My colleague, Mike Gallagher, 50 pounds. He's the record holder. Find out for yourself. No stupid calorie counting, no starvation diet, just a system that recalibrates how your body chemistry works and lets you burn fat. Book your first consultation today. Call 864-644-1900 or just go to myphdweightloss.com. That's 864-644-1900, myphdweightloss.com. Everybody needs to read Vivek's first book, Woke Inc. Superb. It's, you know, on one of my, you know, key bookshelves at home in my library. But let's give a little bit of a glimpse. What is coming out later this year? It's Nation of Victims. What is the topic and what is the goal of this publication, Vivek?
So the topic of the book is to raise the sad reality that victimhood has become the heart of American national identity today. Yeah. All right. We used to be unified by a shared pursuit of excellence as Americans. Unfortunately, one of the things that unifies us today is our shared competition to be seen as a victim. Black victims, white victims, Democratic victims, and increasingly Republican victims. And what I say is that at the end of the day, hardship is not the same thing as victimhood. The thing that can actually unify us in a more deep way as Americans is a revival of the shared pursuit of excellence in our country. And that is not a right-wing value or a left-wing value. It's a fundamentally American value. That's what we really need to revive. Now, I do it by tracing history from Roman history to the history of the Civil War and Reconstruction, all the way to how we got to where we are and the lessons we learned from that. But I think that at the end of the day, we're at a moment where we're looking for reviving a shared national identity, filling a black hole vacuum at the heart of what it means to be an American in the year 2022. We lack a good answer to that question. And my thesis in the book is that the shared pursuit of excellence as Americans can actually fill that void of national identity at a time where we could.
Well, I personally can't wait for that book to be published. Why? Because, and if you don't believe me, I will send you the audio tape from 2 months ago, and the guys here will back me up. After I saw Top Gun, have you seen Top Gun, Vivek?
I did.
Okay, so I've seen Top Gun, and I did a little mini monologue on it when I came back from the theater. And I said, it's super fun, you know, the acting, the special effects, blah, blah, blah. But one thing struck me as I was sitting there, about three quarters of the way in. Of the many things it celebrates, America being one of them, the thing that really, you know, gut punched me was, this is a celebration of excellence. This movie celebrates excellence. And it sounds like that's the aim of your book.
That's absolutely the aim of my book. And, you know, I'm a first generation American. The reason a lot of immigrants come to this country, my parents came to this country, I was born here. The reason they came was to pursue excellence unapologetically. And I think that that's something that goes beyond partisanship and goes to the heart of national identity itself. And you know what? Victimhood has become a really valuable currency. And in some ways, people respond to the incentives they've been given. If you describe yourself as a victim, that's what allows you to get ahead in American society today. That's what I call the death of merit. I think the death of meritocracy paved the way, though, for this victimhood culture. Yeah. And I think that whether that's black victimhood culture or white victimhood culture, I think we need to be able to talk about those things in the open. A lot of people say you can't talk about black victimhood culture if you're not black. I disagree with that. I think that if you actually care about lifting black lives up and all lives up, you have to be able to talk about these issues in the open in order to fix them. But I hope that shared pursuit of excellence is something that can transcend the otherwise seemingly foreordained lines of identity politics and partisan politics. That's what the heart of the book is about.
Right. So talk to us about your new mission. You've got Strive Funds. Clearly, this is another venture in excellence, or to try and break this crazy monopoly, this political monopoly. So what is this new mission? Explain this new organization.
It actually relates to the theme we were just talking about, excellence, where what Strive is doing is competing with the BlackRocks of the world by delivering a different message to corporate America as a shareholder. So what Strive aims to do is exercise its voice as a shareholder on behalf of everyday citizens in this country to not tell companies to pursue politics or social agendas or ESG agendas, but instead to mandate companies to focus exclusively on delivering excellent products and services to their customers and maximize value for shareholders that way, rather than any other agenda, including political or social agendas. That's not stakeholder capitalism, as you'll hear from the ESG crowd. It's what we at Strive call excellence capitalism.
But is it advocacy, or is this a fund that just will operate as funds should and not as BlackRock does?
Yeah, so this is actually just competing directly against BlackRock. Just like as an asset manager would, what we've said is we're launching our first investment product in the third quarter of this year. But you think about the way this is done is these firms like BlackRock and Vanguard, what they offer is index funds, just funds that own the market or segments of the market and provide a vehicle for owning those companies. But when you own those companies, you also have an opportunity as a shareholder to deliver a message to those companies. What those large asset managers like BlackRock and Vanguard are doing is delivering a message to those companies to tell them to go political, to advance progressive values. Strive's voice is bringing a different voice as an asset manager to the table, telling them to actually knock it off with the politics and focus exclusively on products. And I'll have much more to say about that soon. But as we've said before.
So it's strivefunds.com, strivefunds.com. Let's be realistic. Let's just do a little diagnosis, a snapshot of the global market. Right now, those that are political and the Great Reset, the Carl Schwabs, their dominance is what, 99% or 90%? How much of an uphill battle is this going to be, Vivek?
That is the reigning orthodoxy today. Okay, $60 trillion of capital in the global asset management industry is tied up in the Climate Action 100 Plus network. It's actually, Sebastian, it's pretty eye-opening. They coordinate with each other to implement these agendas onto corporate America. The woke corporate problem you described, the root cause of it is actually these large investment managers and asset managers that are enforcing that agenda on corporate America. Strive aims to be the leading affirmative alternative to ESG in capital markets. And you know what? A lot of my old, let's just say compatriots at places like Harvard and Yale and the hedge fund crowds that I've been part of before, you know, look at this as actually a very contrarian play. I personally believe that in a couple of years, this will be the mainstream way of looking at investments, which is to say, focus exclusively on delivering profits, focus exclusively on maximizing shareholder return. And that's actually what lifts all people up, including people up from poverty. That's how capitalism delivers on its promise. And by the way, that also allows the free market to be a place that brings people together across political boundaries, across the boundaries of identity politics. That's something we've forgotten as well.
Well, it's super, super exciting. If I can do anything to help you, then I think this is the future. Strivefunds.com, Vivek Ramaswamy, superb, superb new enterprise. Got one more question for you. This is America First, coming to you from the ReliefFactor.com studios. Relief Factor, pain relief that works, pain relief that's real, pain relief that is liberating 500,000 Americans right now, me included. I had a lower back pain issue that plagued me for 9 years, almost a decade. I took Relief Factor, and 2 weeks later, I was pain-free, and that's more than 3.5 years ago. Find out for yourself. Order the 3-week quick starter pack at ReliefFactor.com. It'll be at your door in 3 days or less. Take it morning and evening like I do, and I promise you, Dr. G's guarantee, by the end of those 3 weeks, you will know whether it works for you like it works for me and 500,000 of your fellow Americans. You've waited long enough. You know it makes sense. 800-500-8384. ReliefFactor.com. ReliefFactor.com. So we don't rehearse any of our questions. Other people, you know, want to send us talking points they want to talk about. We say, nope, that's not how we do things here. So you don't know what I'm going to ask you. It might be a little bit out of left field, but Vivek, you are, and I used the word quixotic deliberately a few minutes ago. You're like a bit of a voice in the wilderness out there. There are not many like you who are prepared to go up against this gargantuan politicized wokery. What is that like, and why are you doing it? I mean, your parents are immigrants like I am to this country. Is it your inheritance? Because it must be quite lonely now and again.
You know, sometimes I like a little bit of alone time. A little bit of alone time gives you extra space to think independently, right? Like, enjoy a nice bath at night. Sometimes you don't have people bothering you. It's kind of the same way intellectually, too. Yeah, as Robert Frost might have said, you take the road less traveled, but you learn more about yourself that way as well, rather than taking your cues by saying what you expect the people around you to, what expectations they have for you to say. What you actually recognize is that most people are actually hungry to be led, not hungry to actually be followed.
Yeah.
And so, you know what? I like to experiment, and also I've changed my mind on things. Not everything I believe today is exactly what I believed 10 or 20 or 30 years ago. I think that's something the conservative movement would do well to remember, not just reciting slogans it memorized in 1980 when the times have changed. I'm first personally on a journey, too, that's not necessarily shackled by what I used to think a decade or two ago. But I think it's one of the things I enjoy. I think that creativity thrives on not being shackled by a prisoner of your own prior convictions, or especially a prisoner of what your peers' convictions are at a given time. Because what you realize is that most people around you don't actually have convictions. They're just saying what they believe the people around them want to hear. And at the end of the day, it's going to be the few people who actually originally offer their own perspectives authentically that ultimately drive change in the world. And you know what? I'm trying to do my part, be it in business, or be it through the books I write, or be it through conversations like this one, to be able to, you know, contribute in a small way to that myself.
Fabulous. Last thing, what is your message to those who are inside corporate America and are feeling the pressure to give in to the woke industrial complex? What would you say to them, Vivek?
I'd say two things, all right? You have a civic obligation, now more than ever, to find that moment when you're the only person in the room who believes what you do. That is the moment when you have a civic obligation to speak up and express yourself without apologizing for it. Be civil, be respectful, but part of being respectful is actually saying what you think rather than trying to shape it to what that audience wants to hear. And my commitment back at you is that if you do that, you'll probably discover that you weren't the only person in the room who believed what you did. And my own view is that, yes, that involves taking some measure of personal risk. And yes, no person should have to choose between speaking their mind freely and putting food on the dinner table. But guess what? You have other people, myself included, who are stepping up and trying to come to the rescue. That's part of what Strive is all about, to change that environment in corporate America such that you won't have to take that risk between putting food on the dinner table and speaking your mind freely. You get to do both of those things at once. And guess what? That's part of what it means to be American.
What a fabulous message. God bless you, Vivek Ramaswamy. Read his books. You've got to get them. Woke Inc., Nation of Victims, StrifeFunds.com. And as ever, it's Friday. Let's end on the words of a very successful businessman.
We will not bend. We will not break. We will not yield. We will never give in. We will never give up. We will never back down. We will never, ever surrender. My fellow Americans, our movement is far from over. In fact, our fight has only just begun.
Our fathers brought forth upon this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
The world will little note or long remember what we say here, but it can never forget what they did here.
I have a dream today.
Ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
I can hear you, the rest of the world hears you, and the people... and the people who knock these buildings down will hear all of us soon.
And we will make America great again.
This is America First with Sebastian Gorka.
Well, I think I speak for all Americans, and perhaps the world. President Biden, please get well soon. I mean, really, really get well soon, okay? Don't get sick, please, because I don't want the crazy cackler in charge, okay? I think she was doing cartwheels to work. But the thing is, he does look fine. He looks fine, and we know with this stuff, the symptoms are mild in this strain. And remember, you know, thank God his wife is a doctor. So I think that's important.
Hey, didn't I call her the crazy cackler? Isn't that my line? Greg Gutfeld saying, get better soon, Joe Biden. Why? Because we don't want Kamala the cackler to be the president. Welcome, dear friends. I'm Sebastian Gorka. It's Friday. It's Ask Dr. G Anything. We have a packed lineup today. You can call in. And, of course, in the second hour, we will be celebrating the Second Amendment as we do every Friday. And we'll have a very special one-on-one with none other than Vivek Ramaswamy, the man who wrote the book, Woke Inc., here on America First. You don't want to miss it. We're waiting for two in-studio guests to arrive momentarily from across the pond. But the breaking news literally less than 10 minutes ago is that my former colleague, my boss, not only at Breitbart but in the White House, has been found guilty of criminal contempt of Congress. Yes, Steve Bannon, which is quite remarkable because the trial, I think, started, what, Thursday with jury selection, met on Friday, and there has been a summary judgment already brought, which means that he has been ordered, the official word of the judge, he has been ordered to appear before the illegal January 6 witch hunt committee. Now, of course, he's going to appeal. There's a reason that we call him the Honey Badger. As you know, if you've seen the viral videos of honey badgers being bitten by poisonous snakes and then waking up a few minutes later, it's hashtag honey badger don't quit. And that is the spirit of Steve Bannon. But what is the bigger conclusion that we have to draw? That the legal system in America, the judicial system, has been fatally corrupted in a political sense. It's very clear. The Constitution is explicit. If you wish to have a temporary investigative committee of the Congress, it must be constituted by members chosen by the leadership of the parties in Congress. And secondly, that committee can only have as its mission a subject relating to imminent legislative action of Congress. Those are the two requirements. Both parties must have their members on that committee because it has subpoena power, because it's powerful. It has sworn testimony. It has investigators. And secondly, it can't be done on a whim. It must be related to tabled legislative action, some bill on whatever the issue is. National security, the border, the economy, corruption in a specific department of the federal government. This committee has neither. We know who the leader of the minority is. It's Kevin McCarthy. Kevin McCarthy gave the majority leader, that is Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the House, his names for people who should be on the committee. Individuals like Jim Jordan. Rock-solid conservatives, members of the Freedom Caucus, who would push back individuals like Matt Gaetz, who take no guff. She just ignored it. Like the speech of President Trump during the address of Congress, she just ripped it up. Because she doesn't care. Because she thinks she's a force unto herself. And so she put people on that committee who are nominal Republicans. Individuals like Adam Kinzinger, like Liz Cheney, who have personal animus to the person they are investigating, to President Trump. Individuals who, well, as somebody sent me today, I have it in front of me. This is a letter from Liz Cheney to the people who live in her district as registered Republicans in Wyoming. And let me just read to you her letter, because this is the person who is one of the leading figures of this committee. Dear friend, God has blessed America, but our freedom will only survive if we protect it, if we take our duty and our obligation seriously. And she writes the next bit, as a Republican, as someone who has the letter R behind her name. Let me finish this, guys. Just get the guys wired up, and then I'll tell you what to do. This is what the letter says. I also know at this moment we are confronting a domestic threat that we have never faced before. And that this former president who is attempting to unravel the foundations of our constitutional republic, our former president is attempting to unravel the foundations of our constitutional republic, and he is aided by Republican leaders and elected officials who have made themselves willing hostages to this dangerous and irrational man. So send her some money. That's the person who is a nominal Republican on the committee. And what else do we have? We have no legislative purpose. None. As a result, it is an illegal committee. That's why I did not comply when I received a copy of the subpoena for my phone records sent from the January 6th committee, 26-page subpoena to my phone carrier, Verizon. Not just my phone records, as somebody who had nothing to do with January 6th, just a former deputy of the president, but my wife's phone records, my children's phone records. I consulted with people I trust, patriots, legal professionals. I hired a lawyer, and I sent a letter to Verizon, to the committee, saying, no, I'm fighting this in court. It's exactly what Steve Bannon is doing. Now, my case has been pushed and pushed and pushed. They're biding for time. Steve Bannon is, of course, a high visibility individual. They hate even more than me. And so they have found him guilty today
of criminal contempt. And they're going to force him to appear before an illegal committee. Let's be clear what's really happening today. This is meant to intimidate you. It's not about Steve or me or even President Trump. It's meant to intimidate you. And they don't care the consequences. Last night, a friend of the show, a combat veteran, New York's Congressman Lee Zeldin, was attacked at a campaign event. Thanks to his quick reactions, he neutralized the person who lunged at his neck with a device that is designed to attack the jugular. It's a weapon, an edged weapon, that a Marine jumped on top of the individual, clearly a Democrat, and zip-tied him. That person has been released from jail without bail in New York. This is the reality. They know no limits. They use the system against those who dare to politically disagree with them, and then they have nothing to say when violence erupts. In fact, they facilitate it by releasing perpetrators back into the community. These are weighty times, my friends. Weighty, weighty times. And we will discuss them all with our guests in studio momentarily. I'm Sebastian Gorka, former strategist to President Trump, member of the National Security Education Board, wherever you are, whatever you're doing. Make sure that you are subscribed to this show. Go right now to Spotify, to your favorite podcast channel. Plug in my name. Never, ever miss an episode. Write us a 5-star review and share the links. We'll be back in a moment.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.